tape one, side two, Marlene Gelman interviewing Mr. Joseph Saul.
It's okay?
Yes.
I'll never forget when an advertisement came that there is going to be a play, Der Irische König Lear, Jewish King Lear. So how was it advertised? The Irische König Lear by Melville Shakespeare. Eisgebesser, improved by Yaakov Gold.
Oh, is that adorable?
See? And, I mean, I just remember it because it was so interesting, but there was hardly an actor. Paul Mooney, that came afterwards, very famous as a movie star, but he actually started as an actor on the Yiddish stage, and his real name is Mooney Weisenfeld. See, and he changed it to Paul Mooney when he became a Hollywood star. And we never missed a play, and also the Abima Theater. See, it's the Abima Theater, it's a Hebrew theater, started in 1918 in Moscow. But it didn't stay in Moscow because in 1926 they left Russia and they traveled all over the world, and they came in Pittsburgh in 1926. And of course it was a great day in our life to have the Hebrew theater, and it was very outstanding. And also we were very much interested in the theater, and from 1921 we started to go to the English theater. And there was not a play, there was not a week that we did not go to the Nixon. And in Pittsburgh there was not one theater, English theater, but there was three theaters. It was the Nixon, the Schubert, and on 6th Street, where the Fulton Theater is now, there was also a theater, and three plays were going on in Pittsburgh every week. And of course, there was no Pittsburgh Symphony at that time, but the Philadelphia Symphony and the Boston Symphony used to come, and Saturday afternoon you could get a ticket for 25 cents on the balcony, and we all went on the balcony too. And that was our cultural life. And in 1924 I decided that I better go to the University of Pittsburgh, of course, at night, and I took up the history of the United States and also the history of the theater. And there was a very outstanding professor in Pittsburgh. His name was Williams at the University of Pittsburgh. And when we were discussing the history of Christianity one day, I mentioned that Karl Kautsky wrote a great book on the history of Christianity. And he was a great professor, but he never heard of the book. And he went to the library and he got a book. And since he read the book, he became a friend of mine. He used to invite me to his house, and Mr. Sol Shapiro, who used to be the head of the Giant Tittle, you know, Frieda Shapiro, her husband, was also a very good scholar, and he used to invite Sol Shapiro and Sol Weisberg, and he used to invite me to spend an evening together to discuss things. So we had a very, very interesting time going to school, studying, and also in our social life.
Wonderful. What about your wife,
Mr. Sutton? See,
where did she come into the picture?
She came in, in 1936, Spain broke down and Franco wanted to push out the government of Spain, which was a liberal and socialist government. And people that supported Spain all over the world started organizations to help Spanish democracy. And in Pittsburgh also an organization started for Spanish democracy. And Florence Perelman was at that time a librarian, she was the librarian of the School of Social Work of the University of Pittsburgh, but she was also very much interested in Spain, and she became the secretary. And on New Year's Eve, 1937, she made a party in her house on South Aiken, and the money was going for the Spanish democracy. And since I was interested in Spanish democracy, I went to the party. And that's the first time I met Florence Hall. And I made a date with her that night to take her to the theater at the Knicks. And since that evening, we only went together.
It was love at first sight.
Yeah.
How old was she?
She was in the early 30s.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you were 34.
Yeah, 1937,
33. Mm-hmm. Very nice. When did you get married?
We got married in 1941.
Mm-hmm.
See, because working on the alien, we didn't make a living.
Mm-hmm.
See, but it happened that Harry Morgan died.
Mm-hmm.
And when he died, they made me the, Kaufman didn't know anything about the business, they made me the head of the business. And I started to make $10,000 a year. So we got married.
Good. And she continued working
for... She worked until 1954.
Mm-hmm. You never had... Well, you didn't have children.
No.
Lots of family.
See, but we did a lot of traveling.
Yes.
We traveled from 1942. We took trips to Europe. We went to Mexico, and it was very interesting. When we were in Mexico, we went to a town which was very famous. I can't think of the name, a small town. And while we were there, a lady came up and started to speak to us English. And I said, "What's your name?" And she told me her name. I says, "Oh, your husband is a artist painter." She says, "How do you know?" I says, "There is a collection of a album of 100 Yiddish Jewish painters in New York, and I know his name is in it." So she invited me right away to her house, and we spent a lot of time with him. Just because we had Yiddish in common, we were invited. The same thing.
Do you remember the name?
Khan.
Khan.
And the same thing was when we were in Cuba, and we got off the ship, and a man said, "Yes, I didn't. You're Jewish." I said, "Yes. We have a Yiddish school." And right away they, and for the week that we spent in Cuba, every night we were invited in private houses because we spoke Yiddish.
Mm.
And it was interesting when we were in France on the Riviera, and we were sitting in Nice in a cafe, and I heard a couple speak Yiddish. And of course, I went over to talk to them. And we spent the afternoon together, and they invited us to come to their house in Paris and stay with them. See? And I could tell hundreds of stories with people all over the world that we met just because we spoke Yiddish. We had a very, very great time. Also, in Mexico City, we were invited to a private house for an evening. And we didn't know that in Mexico, you eat 10 o'clock. But we came 7 o'clock, and we were sitting and waiting. And there were many Yiddish writers who lived in Mexico City or there. And each one was telling me his life story and everything. And it was 10 o'clock and we were very hungry. And she invited us to the dinner. So one writer says, "Wait a minute, I want to read you a chapter of my new book." And of course, we couldn't say that we are hungry. And we sat down and read a chapter of his book. After I finished, another writer says, "Now you're going to do something." And he read a chapter of his book. See? So this is our experience with Yiddish writers.
Is your wife...
She speaks a little bit of Yiddish.
Yeah.
She understands, because we lived a year in Israel.
You did.
In 1964. And it was very, very interesting.
You left your job? And
went, what?
You left your job.
Yeah, I took off a sabbatical. See? And we went to Israel. And when we announced that we are going to Israel, everybody in the heavenly knew that I'm going to Israel. Jack Walk, I don't think if you know, maybe you know him, was the head of the Bonds of Israel at the time. So he says, "You know, Joe, I have a very good friend in Israel. He's a general. His name is Zivi, but everybody calls him Gandhi. See, he looks like Gandhi. I want you to take a present for him." I says, "Of course I will." And he sent me 3 air conditioners. And I took it with me. So when we came to Israel, we came by ship in 1964. When we came by ship, it was announced when we got off the ship that, "Mr. Saul, we are waiting for you." And I went over to the information desk and General Gandhi was waiting for us. We didn't have to go through nothing, and he took us right away in his car, and he took us from Haifa to Tel Aviv. And a few days later, he got us a house in Sahala, which is 4 miles out of Tel Aviv. Sahala in Hebrew means army. 600 houses was built for the officers of the Israeli army. And he got us a house with almost an acre garden, and we lived there in that year. And it was the most interesting year of our life, because we met the most outstanding people. Moshe Dayan lived right across the street from us.
Where was he then?
He was the head of the Israeli army. He was a member of the cabinet.
What did you do in Israel?
We went, maybe you know the Applebaums in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
They live in Israel.
Yeah.
See, we didn't know them in Pittsburgh, but they also lived in Sahara.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a car, and they used to drive us every morning to Ulpan, which are a day school, to learn Hebrew, and we learned Hebrew during the day. And of course, in the evening, there is another very interesting story. When we were coming to the United States, we had to go to Warsaw to get a visa. So when I was in Warsaw, this was the first time, I went to a lecture of a man by the name of Zrubovel, who was running for Congress of Poland, which is in Poland, it's called Sejm. And he gave the lecture, and they were selling his pictures in 1920, and I bought a picture. In 1963, I opened the Jewish Chronicle, and there is a picture of Mr. Zrubovel. He's coming to lecture in Pittsburgh. I took my wife and I went to my archives and I found the picture and I went to the lecture. He spoke at the Y. And I walked over to him. I said, "You know the gentleman?" He says, "Why did you keep my picture for 43 years?
Isn't that fun?
And we right away, and the next morning, I never drove a car. I took him in a cab to the airport. The next year, when I came to Israel, I went to see a friend of mine who was an editor of a Yiddish magazine in New York, and they told me he's in Tel Aviv. So I went to see them, I rang the bell, and the lady opened up the door. She didn't ask us our name, and before we knew, she was giving us tea and everything, and I asked her name, and she was also a Yiddish writer, but I didn't know, and she was a sister of the editor of New York. And she says, why did you come to see me? I says, because I'm a friend of your brother, and I thought your brother said it. But he says, she's not here, and we became right away friends. So I told her the story about Zrubovel that I met, I had a picture. I came back to the old hotel, I had a telephone ring. Mr. Saul, yeah, this is Mr. Zrubovel. You're in Tel Aviv and you didn't call me. I'm coming over to see you right away. They came over to see me right away, and of course, and the hotel manager came over to me. Mr. Saul, I says, yes. Who are you? I says, why? Mr. Zrubovel came to see you. He was the head, the minister of culture. And he came to see you. You must be somebody. So I told him the story. You know, the, in Pittsburgh, the Y is the music concert. And Hermann Recht, you remember him?
No.
He was an attorney. He was the head of the music department. And we were very good friends because I was on the committee of the Y music department. So when we went to Israel, he brought Daniel Barenboim, who was that time a 16-year-old pianist in 1964, and now he's a conductor, see, in Paris and Vienna and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave a concert in the Y. So he talked to him. He says, my parents live in Tel Aviv. He says, your parents live in Tel Aviv. My friends live in Tel Aviv. And he gave him her address. And Daniel Barenboim wrote to his parents in Tel Aviv. And the Barenboims were the head of the music in Tel Aviv, and they used to invite us every Friday night for dinner, and everybody in the music world in Tel Aviv used to be there, and we used to meet them. And Saturday night, we used to be invited to the house where she was the Yiddish writer. And on the other evenings, there were a lot of people that I knew in my town, and we are the organization of our town. So almost every night somebody used to invite us, and we used to spend, and we had the most interesting year.
What was Israel like in 1964?
Much, it was much more interesting than now.
Yeah.
See, I mean, we should criticize people. See, now the emphasis is money. See, everybody is talking about money. See, in 1960, the emphasis was culture, see, and it was people, money didn't mean anything. Today people are, see, that's the reason why I have 1 million Israelis came to the United States to make money.
Yeah.
I think I had...
10 more minutes.
What?
10 more minutes.
10 more minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so I'll tell you a good story about Pittsburgh.
Okay.
Right. We came back from Israel. See, we had to look for a place to live. And we thought that the best place to live is around the university, because my wife's friends were all at the university. She used to have lunch with all the people, and so we decided that we are going to look for a place to live. And there was an apartment available in the Dietrich Towers, because our Mrs. Rosenthal died, and her son was my niece's husband, so we got the apartment and we moved in there. and we loved it very much, and we stayed there a long time. But in 1977, the condominium, the Dietrich Towers became a condominium, and you had to buy your apartment. We didn't feel like buying our apartment because it was on the second floor near the parking lot. And near the parking lot, it was noisy and everything, so we said we are not going to buy. And they let us stay a year till we find something else. I do the income tax for everybody in the building, all the workers, therefore the management, for the manager. So the manager was very much interested for us to stay. So one day they said, you know, there is an apartment for rent. Mr. Hunt from Alcoa bought an apartment for a woman that worked for them for 50 years. And she moved in on May 1st. On May 23rd, she died. And he wants to rent the apartment. And therefore, I should call his attorney and I'll get it to him. So who is the attorney? They said Mr. Hengersoll in the U.S. building, 57th floor. I came there on the 57th floor, and I asked I want to see Mr. Hunt's attorney. He says, we have only 62 attorneys here. Which attorney do you want? So she looked up. I said, Mr. Hunt's attorney. She looked up. He says, Mr. Newman. And she took me into his office. So Mr. Newman says, how long do you live in the building? I looked at him. I said, since we came back from Israel. Israel, says, my daughter is in the Hebrew University. And we didn't talk anymore about the apartment, but we talked about the Hebrew University. And we became right away friends, and we got the apartment. Mm-hmm. And after we lived a year there, they transferred the apartment to us for the same price as they bought.
You're still living there.
They're still in there.
Renting.
What?
You rent.
No.
They bought it.
See, like
because they give it to us for the same price.
Okay.
Just because we were in Israel.
Really got you places, huh? During the Depression in Pittsburgh, Mr. Saul, do you remember?
Oh, yes.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
Oh, yes.
Anything you want to tell us about that?
I thought it's...
Is it
we'll stop now. Yeah, we'll stop.